Waco, Waco, Waco. We're going to find out how to pronounce it in the Arrowverse. Welcome to In the Arrowverse. I'm Christy Wong.
And I'm Dan Milliken. We've got a great show for you today, especially for you guys who grew up loving the open cockpit biplane stories. We've got a good one for you in the Arrowverse.
But first, I want to know.
You want to
how do you pronounce it?
All right, so we've got Charles Cook. We've got Jeff Rowland. Who can correctly pronounce Waco, Waco?
I like the Waco part for me.
Because you're from Waco?
No, not Waco. Waco. That's Waco. The part I like.
So, Charles, what is the...
It's Waco.
It is Waco.
Weaver Aircraft Company.
Weaver Aircraft Company. Oh. Why did they decide Waco
instead of Waco or Waco?
I do not know, but it's just a brief, you know, a first letter off each letter of the name, and they pronounce it Waco.
Probably up there, they probably never heard of Waco, Texas at that time.
Right.
So where were they from?
They were from Ohio.
Oh, those Yankees.
Right.
Okay. So did they not drink Dr. Pepper and know that
I think Waco's the one got it wrong.
Oh. All right. So talk about the Waco company, how they got started and how they made their mark.
Well, I don't know exactly how they got started. They started with some one-of airplanes. The one I probably know the most about is they had a thing called the Waco Cootie. And if you look at that, it's very off from what a modern biplane would be. But they progressed through. They finally got to a Model 9, and that's where they really started to get the airplane correct. But the engines were still the OX-5 engines, so it was a 90 horsepower, big, heavy engine. And
what time frame are we talking?
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking early 20s.
Early 20s.
Okay,
right.
So we're talking like the
just
dawn.
Post-World War
yes.
One.
Okay, got
yes.
it, got it.
And this is where the biplane really structurally and aerodynamically really started to come together, because prior to that, in World War One, it was as much artesian eye to how it was made in mm-hmm. a French curve. And it was now starting to turn into a little bit more of an engineered and
manufacture
process, and we're targeting what we want out of the airplane. So, in a word, it was becoming more scientific at that time. And so when they got to the Waco 9, that was what we would consider a modern biplane.
But that was early 20s.
Correct, but it had a heavy engine on it that produced 90 horsepower.
Liquid-cooled.
Yeah, liquid-cooled.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right.
Interesting.
Had a big radiator.
Right, so that was right as the more modern radials started to come along. So they re-engineered a 9 to hold a more powerful engine, and that was the Waco 10. And that was how they were numbering them, 9, 10. Well, a little bit of refinement to the 10 became the O, which meant open cockpit. And visually, you really can't tell a difference between the two airplanes, but they did have a distinction in the model. There is some difference there. And the O is what really became the Waco biplane, and that's what really sold for them. And there's an interesting statistic. At one point in the U.S., one half of all the flying airplanes wore Wacos. That's how dominant they were in the market.
Interesting. Do they still make them today?
They do, but it's a highly... The last Waco model they made was a YMF. So what's made today is a YMF-5, a dash number. It's a modification of the earlier Wacos. And it's still named Waco, but it's a new company.
Oh, okay, I was about to say, because I was we were visiting Scotland. Christy and I were doing some taking off episodes there, and I got to fly in a brand new Waco.
Right.
And so I was like, really?
But it looks like the old Waco.
Well, right. Yeah, it was a 3-person bench seat up front and a pilot in the back.
Well, most Wacos were 3-seaters, 2 up front,
or
one
two
in
up
the
front.
Back.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Right. So
three very small people up front.
Yeah,
yeah. two up front, one in the back. So the pilot would sit in the back seat, passengers up front. And that was very standard Waco design right there.
So if they called it the O, It was 7, 8, 9, 10, and now O, because open cockpit. Were the numbered ones not open cockpit?
They were. Visually, they're not very far off from each other. Structurally, I think, is where more of the difference was made, because they had to go from a 90 horsepower up to the 350, 400 horsepower engines, and that took some redesign in the structure.
Okay.
They got off on that lettering thing, too, that not many people can even comprehend, but O, open cockpit, A meant the engine type. For example, ATO would be some kind of engine like a Wright 760.
Yep.
T would be a taper wing shape, and then O was the fuselage style. And
so Waco really loved letters.
It was
crazy.
The funny thing is, it was actually a very inspired model system, mm-hmm. except it became crazy once you put it into
practice.
Okay, so here's a question then. What is the CRG?
CRG, so C is a, let's see, C would be a Wright engine. R is racing, right? And then G is the model of airfoil that was put on the wing.
Okay.
So, again, it used their basic naming system.
Okay.
And the CRG, so what is the Waco CRG?
Well, I want to wait to get to the Waco CRG.
Okay.
Before we do that, I think it's important to understand the plane, that we understand the time.
Very good.
Take me to aviation in the 20s and set up to the end of the 20s when the CRG was made.
Well, aviation in the 20s was in its infancy, but everybody was seeing the potential of what aviation was going to be. In other words, we can see where it's going and we're almost there, and we need to make the public aware of what it is. And one of the early ones, interestingly enough, to grasp onto this was Henry Ford.
Okay.
And most people in aviation have heard of a Ford tri-motor.
Right.
Well, a Ford tri-motor was really, there were other viable transport airplanes, but suddenly here came one with the Ford name, which was reliability, that was all metal, which meant reliability. Three engines meant reliability, and he was going to put in an air transport system, and all he had to do was prove to the public, these things are reliable, and I want you to know it. So the Ford Motor Company came up with the Ford Reliability Air Tour.
Okay.
Okay, and what it was there for, really, they sold it as, we're going to show the reliability of certified airplanes. But what they were going to showcase were Ford tri-motors and build an air system.
So in the late 20s, Ford comes up with the Ford Reliability Air Tour, really to promote their aviation division, which is ironic today, but yeah.
Yes. And to go with that, you were also having your Cleveland air races, mm-hmm. which were big for proving up engines and advancement. So there was a lot of reliability type advancement and faster, heavier, higher type achievements being done to sell aviation to the public. And really, I'm going to mention this one other thing. You also had your first airmail system put in place.
Oh, yeah.
And Waco was big in that. They built a lot of mail service airplanes.
Specialty airplanes.
Airplanes that had a special cargo section in them.
Still biplanes?
Single-engine, open cockpit biplanes. And
probably not a 90 horsepower.
No, these were more along the lines of 220 horsepower engines.
Yeah.
This is something that Lindbergh did.
Yep.
Airmail routes.
Oh, that's right. He did that before.
And don't forget, these airmail routes were assigned later to the airlines. That's how the airlines started CAM-1, CAM-4.
Yeah, that's right.
Civil airmail routes. Ah. And it's quite fascinating how it morphed into what we have today.
Well, that's probably a whole nother episode.
Totally.
We should do that.
That's a really good episode because there's a lot of history.
But that is where the state of aviation was at that point.
And air racing, which you touched on, was becoming huge. It was NASCAR in 1928 and 1929.
Correct.
And the Depression is hitting us, but yet people would escape for air races.
Correct. And I'm going to tell you another side issue, but a lot of our advantage in World War II came from what was designed to beat the other guy in these air races. It advanced our technology tremendously.
Interesting. All right, so now enter the CRG.
The CRG. So Waco, so Ford sets up the Ford Reliability Air Tour for the Tri-Motor to be showcased. Mm-hmm. And what happens? Waco beats them for 2 years in a row with taper wings, which was an old model with a taper wing on it. And Waco, seeing we're doing something here, we're going to win it next year too, because it's showcasing our company, not Henry Ford's, decided to build two special airplanes for the Ford Reliability Air Tour to win it. These were targeted airplanes at that air race, only two of them, but the hook was they had to be certified. So when you think about today certifying an airplane, what you had to go through, of course it was different then, but very big steps for a company to do to bring something in. And what happened is very shortly before the air tour that year, Ford, who was the patron of it, the sponsor laying the course out, putting the prizes, changed the rules where only a tri-motor could win.
So Henry Ford cheated.
Yeah, yeah. They did a little hometown tune-up there. But the interesting thing of that is the two CRGs came in second and third, so the winner was a tri-motor. And so even with a stacked deck, they still came in second and third with these airplanes. And these were very brutal courses meant to test the reliability. They were 5,000 to 6,000-mile courses.
Oh, wow.
Right. These were not short run one afternoon. It was they would go up through Canada, down the West Coast, down through Texas, and back up through the central U.S. So very grueling, long courses.
How many of these CRGs were made?
Only two.
Only two. Those two?
Only two, yes.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
We don't know where one of them is.
So late 20s.
Yes.
Now flash forward to just a few years later when you've got a young child here who has a book on famous airplanes. Okay. Charles, talk about that.
Well, I grew up in an aviation family, as I said. My grandfather was a pilot. My dad was a pilot. And all I would do is thumb through aviation magazines. I loved it. My parents knew it, so I got a set of books for Christmas of all the air. Right? How many kids would be excited about this?
Yeah.
11, 12 years old, and I get 9 volumes of all the certified airplanes ever
made. Sounds like gold
to me. You are so lucky.
Yeah. And
can I come play at your house?
Pretty much. And so I would sit there and read these 9 volumes just over and over. And there was a handful of airplanes I would look at many times going, oh, that is so cool. And one of the primary ones was the Waco CRG. And it's a very unique airplane. It has a very high stance gear on it. It sits up different. It's, if you know what a Boeing 100 is, very Boeing 100 looking, which was
the Stearman?
No, very early fighter plane.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it was a fighter plane. Howard Hughes had one. That's
okay.
How. So I would look at this CRG. And, of course, being 11, 12 years old, I would read, and there was only one or two, and it was for a race. And I would go, I don't know why they didn't build more of these. It's such a gorgeous airplane, right? So it always stuck in my mind. It was one of the few airplanes that, from that set of books, an airplane you were probably never going to see because there were only two.
So they probably, who knows what happened to them?
Who knows what happened to them? But I would always just flip to that page and go, would you look at that gorgeous airplane? So it was on my mind, and not enough that I really inspected it later in life, but I always go, yeah, that CRG. Well, 30 years later, I see a video of a CRG flying, and I go, are you kidding me?
On YouTube.
On YouTube. And I go, are you kidding me? The airplane is still around. And I'm going, that is cool. Well, my instructor, my powered plane instructor, had a taper wing. And so when I was 16 years old, I traded for a Great Lakes, flew it about 20 hours, and I was allowed to fly a Waco taper wing, which is another epic airplane. And So weird. I'm looking at a Waco 16. I'm flying Wacos, and boy, I'm immersed in the Waco world.
Put it in perspective. That Waco didn't have dual controls.
Yep.
This is. Oh. We flew that airplane back when we were kids, and he said, go.
Yeah. Jeff and I went through, were kids together, and our instructor let us fly a Waco Taperwing with one set of controls on student licenses.
So if your friends doing that, did both of you friends go up there? So one guy was you know, bait up front and the other had
no,
to stay?
No, we were students, so it was,
take anybody.
You're signed off, you get
okay.
to go alone.
Okay,
right?
All right.
And so I was
at least that's your story.
Yeah, so I was flying this Waco Taperwing, and so I was well-versed in Wacos. And like I said, later I see this CRG, and I go, are you kidding? That's this that CRG I used to look at, which made me go look it up again. I still have the books, and I read about it. And I'm going, that is really incredible. Well, the Taperwing we used to fly when we were kids came up for sale, and I went and bought the airplane.
Just like that.
Yeah, and nice. When I did, they go, I said, yeah, I saw there was this CRG, and they go, yeah, we just sold it. And I go, what? Oh. And I go, what? And they go, yeah, we had that airplane a month and a half ago. And I was going, are you kidding? And I go, kind of good, because I would have come up here trying to buy two airplanes. And so, again, now my interest is even more piqued, because I'm going.
You know it's out there.
Yeah, well, and I'm just going, I'm half going, I'm glad I didn't know, but I kind of hated I didn't know, right? Well, lo and behold, a couple months later, I just look on Barnstormers, and there is the CRG. Whoever when they sold it, the guy put it up for sale. And I called him and made a deal, and I became owner of the CRG.
Was it the one from the magazine?
It is. So there were two of them.
Talk about what happened to them.
So there were two of them, and one was made for, and this is the interesting thing, one of them was made for a guy named Art Davis, who was a famous early racing pilot. That CRG, and both of these were raced for Waco, to put the Waco name out. That was their only purpose.
Well, they're not really good for anything else.
Right.
Funny airfoil, the whole bit.
Right. So the Art Davis one got converted to a very early crop duster and was crashed, and that was the end of it. The other one, the one I own, was the primary plane. So that was the back.
That's the one that came in second?
It third.
Oh, so it's the one that came in third. Okay.
The one I bought came in second.
Oh, that's what I mean. Yeah, okay.
Okay. And so the one I bought was the primary plane. In other words, here's the one we're building, and here's the one.
That's a backup.
Kind of like a NASCAR team. It's really not the backup. Go ahead and win if you can, but, you know, okay. If we get a little better.
Car two.
Yeah, car two, right? So the primary one was made to be flown by a pilot named John Livingston. And if you've ever heard of the book John Livingston Seagull, that is where they got the name, was from the racing pilot John Livingston.
Oh, okay.
So John Livingston was the pilot of 600 Yankee, which is the airplane I bought, and which is the one that came in second behind the Ford Trimotor.
Wow.
So when you found the airplane, you were like, oh my gosh, this is it. Was it in good flyable condition?
That's the question.
Oh, no.
All right, so take us to that.
That's the question, isn't it? So I bought it. The airplane had I'm rounding a number here, 40-year cover job on it. So a fabric airplane really, in its inception, was made to be recovered every 10 years. The materials have become so good, the modern Seconite and Stitz, that a cover job now has a much longer life on it. Well, 40 years is even a little beyond what Seconite ought to do.
Even the Seconite may not wear out, but the stuff underneath just falls apart. It's just wood and stuff. It needs to be attended to more often than that.
So the airplane was flown to the owner prior to me, but they didn't consider it really ready to be flyable. So I drove from Fort Worth, Texas to Sonoma, California, took the airplane apart, put it on a trailer, and drove it home. And it just killed me, because here's your airplane you've known about since you were a kid and you're just tweaked to own it, but you don't get to fly it.
Yeah.
So I bring this airplane home and put it in the hangar, and even in pieces, I would stand there and go, man, this is cool. I own, I have.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So even in pieces, I was still a little jaw-dropped with the airplane.
I would be. How long ago was it that you bought it?
I think about 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
That long. Okay.
So where are we at with the restoration of it now?
When is it going to fly?
Well,
yeah, where are we going flying?
It's
going
to be very soon. So what happened is we kind of were forming up a plan, and the airplane had been, through the ages, it had been slightly modified. So it went from an air racer to a Pepsi Skyrider. It was the first Pepsi Skyrider.
Interesting.
And in between that, it set some altitude records for female pilots. Apparently, they got it up around 30,000 feet.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. I mean, it's a very storied airplane.
Oh, my gosh.
So in the course of moving through these different phases of life, it picked up some questionable modifications. Luckily, biplane kind of is built with a wood basket around it. Around the welded fuselage. Mm-hmm. So the modifications primarily were in the wood basket, which just bolts off and goes back on easily. And Chad Ezell from Warbird Restore, a show we have on Aeroverse, I talked with him, and he took the fuselage, and the ailerons had been modified. So we've gone back to a conformal Waco aileron. And he did the structural, and I'm going to say the non-structural, even the basket work. And we've got the airplane back to a 1927 Waco, which
That's
I'm very
so
excited
cool.
about. And it is cool because you don't see many airplanes mm-hmm. of that age in their original form like this, especially when they were such a specialized airplane. And the problem with a specialized airplane is they're only good for one use. So to get it to the next use, it had to be modified. So we were able to take all that off and get it back to the original use. And
bad news, then there'll be no riders.
Oh, no.
Specialized one seat.
I thought you'd have two up front.
Not anymore.
My heart. No.
But you know what? It's gorgeous.
I tell you what, I'll be on the ground and I'll wave you off when you go.
Yeah. So we brought the airplane back out to Fort Worth, and another person I grew up with, Frank Doyle, is doing the wing cover job. So we're in the process. We've got two panels done, and there's five total because you have a center section. So we've got three more wing panels to put together. And then Jeff and Whitney are doing the fuselage and the tail surfaces. So they're working on fabricating the fuselage, horizontal tail, and vertical tail. And really, if everybody applied, and in this day and age we can't, we're handling a lot of things, but if everyone applied theirself, the airplane could easily be airworthy in 3 weeks. There's no doubt in my mind.
We plan on taking the Oshkosh.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Definitely.
Yep.
Wow.
Now,
one of you is going to take it to Oshkosh, apparently.
Yeah. And so I don't think we'll have it. 3 weeks is not a realistic time.
Right, because you're not going to be full pedal to the
right. Moment. But it'll be within the next two and a half months, we think we'll have the airplane together.
Nice.
So,
all right. Any hard problems in the fabricating or anything?
I tell you, it is a really easy airplane to work on. It's so big, and it's very basic. It's just a little larger than most of the things I fool with. But you know, I've done the Buker over several times, several Bukers and Cubs, and they're much more complicated. It's really it's really fun to work on.
Okay.
It is really cool. It's very basic, and it's just no mystery in it. And I hope you've got a chance to see it, but it's a fascinating piece of history.
I have seen it. I will admit, I haven't seen it yet. It is beautiful. Chrissy, you'll fall in love.
Okay.
You will fall in love.
Mm-hmm. I bet the propeller is just beautiful.
Oh, it's a big airplane. It's huge.
That big gear so they can swing that big propeller on that thing.
That's it. The boss on the propeller is about a foot and a half over my head.
I can walk under the blade horizontal, which is unusual. Most times I've always run into them.
Be still my heart.
All right. So if you guys want to see the Waco CRG, we're in the process at Arrowverse. By the time you're watching this, it may even be in our library. Here on the app is a documentary on Charles and Jeff going through and rebuilding and restoring this amazing piece of history. So go and check it out here at Arrowverse.
And can I add? Mm-hmm. And we hope to have it at Oshkosh at our booth this year. So come by the Arrowverse booth, and you can look right at the airplane in person.
I don't want to plug Aviat or anything, but we're right next door to them. So we're in the big time.
Yeah, you're in the big time.
Which are also nice airplanes.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you guys for watching, and don't forget to check out the other stuff
in the Arrowverse.